Welcome to another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. Our mission is to bring you discussions on a wide array of topics in the coaching world to grow players on and off the court. You can connect with us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, and also reach us directly through email at basketballteacherpodcast@gmail.com. Now, here's your host, Coach Mike Hernandez.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you guys so much for joining us here for another episode. As always, wherever in the world you're listening to us from and whatever platform you're listening to us on, thank you guys so much for the support, all of the messages, all the emails, all the great things that you've sent the show's way. Keep those suggestions for topics coming and things that you would like to hear me bring guests on to talk about. I know that one of the things that you all really like to have conversations about and like to hear me have conversations about are those things on the X's to O's side. I know a lot of y'all are really passionate about defense, and I think that's great because I consider myself a defensive person. I love, you know, all things related to defense. Offense is great, but defense, I really love getting into that, and I'm really excited to bring an episode to you here today talking about defense, talking about a matchup zone, talking about what it looks like to run one successfully, kind of some nuances, some ins and outs with it, and why maybe a matchup zone is something that you want to go into this coming year, or if you already run a matchup zone, maybe get some ideas on how to tweak it or adjust it or change it a little bit. But really just excited to get into some defense and talk about some defensive principles and execution with y'all. Of course, I don't do this alone. I am very happy to have my guest here today, who is the head varsity coach at Wilson Academy. Very happy to be joined by Coach Corey Cameron today. Coach, really appreciate you being able to spend some time and talk to us today. How are you doing?
I'm great, man. Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate you for having me on. I'm excited to be here, excited for an opportunity to talk about defense and the matchup zones. It's kind of our calling card as to who we are as a program. So thanks again for having me.
Yeah, love it. Really looking forward to getting this conversation going, Coach. Let's start with you and your basketball journey and your coaching journey. Where's the game of basketball taking you, and how did you end up at Wilson Academy?
Well, I started out just, you know, always loving the game. I remember my first time just watching the Miami Heat, watching them on my television at home back in South Florida. And from that point, I loved the game. I loved everything about it. I watched that team go through, you know, its maturation, and just the very essence of the Miami Heat was built on toughness and defense. So that was kind of ingrained in me, and I had a great high school coach and college coach just kind of instill some things into me about defense, and I just carried that over. I started off coaching at the middle school level, and I came in when I moved to Atlanta. I was an assistant coach at a middle school that pretty much hadn't won any games. So
okay.
when I got there, the head coach had to go on a leave of absence because his wife had a child, and I was the interim coach. And within that, you know, 4 or 5 weeks time, we had went on a 5-0 winning streak. And and the athletic director came down. He was like, "Man, we got to keep you around here, man. We hadn't won a game, and I don't know when." And so it was just, you know, I saw a group of kids that had the passion for the game, but just didn't really understand how to put it together as a group collectively. And so I just kind of shared with them the importance of, first and foremost, playing hard, and then number two, playing defense, and then allowing your offense to kind of find itself. And that's how we, you know, built the program there, where we went from a team that, you know, that year and I was there, we won 4 games. And then we went from those 4 games to 2 years later, we were tied for the regional champions in that, at that school. And that opened up other opportunities for me, where I was getting calls to take head coaching jobs at, you know, multiple schools. And I ended up choosing to go to Wilson Academy. Mm-hmm. I chose there because, you know, the principal, we had a really great talk. He's a former player. He played at Division I level. And so he gave me the autonomy to kind of build a program in a way and put my stamp on it, which was something that I really wanted. And, you know, although the team really wasn't that great when I got there, I was always already accustomed to that because I came from middle school that I built from, well,
Yeah.
helped build from nothing. You know what I mean?
Right,
And
right.
so, we started that program, and fortunate for me, when I went there, some players followed me there, and we were able to win a state championship my first year there, at the 1A level. So that was a thing that was shocking to everyone.
That's fantastic.
But that was predicated on us playing defense. I told them that one of the sayings that I had there was defense is our offense. So, we played a lot of, we worked on a lot of defensive concepts and ideas, and that was an everyday thing in practice. We learned how to transition the guys into, really getting in there and pressing the ball when we needed to. Another thing, they just had to be in shape. So that took our program from being in a bottom 500 program in the state of Georgia to this year. We're a top 50 program. I think we're ranked like 42nd in the state of Georgia. And that's with us playing a pretty tough national schedule. We've played, four or five of the top 25 teams in the nation, Link Academy, Lalamere, and so on and so on, to say if Sunrise Christian and all of those teams, although we've only beaten two of those teams out of the ones that we played, the margin outside of Link Academy was less than 10 points.
Oh,
And
okay.
it was all predicated again on our defensive approach and our team playing hard.
No, that's, I mean, it's what a cool story to be able to like take into a program, right, where there's not like a lot of expectations, and but you really get the autonomy or that freedom to kind of like do what it is that you want to do and really put your stamp on things, and then just to see it just bloom and blossom from there. Like I think as a coach there can't be too much of a better feeling to know that you really got to put your stamp on it like you did.
Oh yeah, I'm very, very, very proud and thankful for the opportunity to be able to do it. So,
That's great. Coach, you talked about this concept of building a culture that's a playing hard culture, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to kind of define what does that mean, and how do you kind of get your guys excited to play, bought in, excited to play that sort of style? What does that mean to your program, that playing hard culture?
well, a lot of it is that even when we're going through our process of picking our teams, we're a small academy. Our school, our private school, has maybe about 200 kids. So,
Oh, yeah.
we have kids that are thankfully that are in the area that know that's that has learned about our school through the process that we went through to get out there. And when they come in, we may have four or five kids every year that come through during the off season and say, "Hey, coach, I want to come in and play for your school. I see what you guys are doing, et cetera, et cetera." And I was like, it's not gonna be easy to play here. And after we go through, an initial assessment, which is pretty much a little workout that we go through with the kids, a lot of them make their own decision after that workout. If they want to be there or not. It's just like, man, nah, this is way too tough for me. I didn't know it was like that. So, we just set the bar high, with our conditioning program. And that's part of how we determine or develop the idea of playing hard. We make it so hard in our conditioning that playing the game feels easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, make it so that like you put in all the hard work right beforehand before the game starts.
Right. And it takes a special kind of kid. And I make sure that it's not just about the kid, it's about the parent, because that's a major factor in developing a culture. You have to have parents that buy into your approach, that buy into your developmental process. And I've been fortunate to come across some really great parents, and most of those parents, they stick with me and they stick with our program. I have a few that just, it was a little too much for them. It was a little bit too intense. They couldn't take all the old school approach of, going outside and going on the field, the football field, and going for runs and laps around the football field. They're just like, people actually still do that? They don't just You guys just don't shoot free throws and shoot jump shots. I'm like, no, sorry, that's not what works here for our kids. So, I think that the reason that our kids buy into the approach is because they see the results. We've been fortunate enough, again, in the program. I've been there, this is my fourth season, and we've only gotten better as a program, and our recruiting process for sending kids to college has only gotten better. My first year, we sent a kid to JUCO level, which was excellent. We were very happy. Had one graduating senior out of that class, a part of that state championship team. Everybody else were freshmen. And then the next year, I had a kid transfer in with no offers, no opportunities, and he left with a scholarship to an NAIA. And this year, we're sending kids to have some Division I kids that's going out this year, as well as some Division II kids going. So we're getting better. And my 25 class that's going to be seniors this year, these kids are getting looks and offers from some Power Fives and Power Conferences and
That's great.
SEC schools right now. So it tells me that we're, kind of going in the right direction, and that's attractive to a lot of the parents that are looking for a school that not only prepares their kids, athletically for the sport, but also academically, so that they can have the right test scores and the right grades to get into school. Because the Wilson Academy, long before I got there, they were sending 80% of their kids to school on academic scholarships before I even entered the building.
Oh,
So,
that's fantastic.
yeah, so it's a good mix, and we're trying to build something special there in Atlanta.
Yeah, no, that's it, and one of the things you mentioned, which I think is it's hard to do sometimes as a coach, is when you see those guys or those girls who got a lot of talent, got a lot of promise, and you know that, I mean, man, they probably could be good players, but they don't have that, work ethic that you require. They don't they're not willing to put in the time or willing to put in the effort that you want. It's like, man, man, they probably could be a really good player if they would, be able to do those things, but that since they're not putting that work in, since they're not playing up to that level, and you can't take them, and you gotta cut, say, hey, this isn't gonna work for you, and it's not gonna work for you, and it's a shame, but it is what it is. We got to go with the people that are bought into the culture.
That's buying in. And another thing too is that I think one of the things that has helped our program is that I put up or shut up. So if we go on a 4 mile run, the kids are not going a 4 mile run by themselves. Coach is out there going a 4 mile run with them, and I just make it mandatory. I said, listen, no one better come in behind me. If you come in behind me, then you can't play here. And so that's one of the things that I remember when I was in high school, my JV coach would do that. He would get out there, he'd go put on his shorts and shoes, and man, he'd take off, man. And you just like, you better make it back before Coach Coleman get back, man, or you're gonna be off this team.
Yeah, I mean, what a way to, lead from the front, right? Lead by example.
By
I'm
example.
ask you to do it, 'cause I'm going to do it too. Maybe not as quick as you, but I'll still be out there.
Gonna be out there,
Yeah,
man.
that's awesome. Coach, let's talk about some defense and matchup zone, and let's talk about why that this is something that has been so successful and has worked for you. Well, let's talk about what you get out of it that really gets your team to where it needs to be.
Well, one of the benefits for us is the matchup zone that we run is the beauty of it is that most people don't understand it, right? They don't understand the nuances of what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how we're doing it. So it confuses a lot of players when they see us running what they would think looks like. One zone, they may think we're looking like we're going to play 1-2-2 or 2-3, but it's really something else that we kind of morphed into. And to be perfectly honest with you, it was an accidental thing, right? We kind of stumbled upon it one day when I was at the middle school level. Me and my assistant coach, we split the kids up, and he took the lesser group. The bench guys, and I was like, all right, man, just send your best defensive approach at me. And what he did was he set the kids up in a 2-3, and they ran a run and jump where they started off at 2-3 and they ran into a 1-3-1. And I was like, stop, 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 stop. Do that again. Do that again. And I said, from that, I said, man, I said, it could be really good if we scheme our defense where we set up in a particular shell, like we're going to look like we're going to run one defense, but we're really running something else out of it.
We'll disguise, yeah.
Yeah, we disguise it, and then we just start as really getting into what we're trying to actually run, which is our matchup zone. And so that's kind of how our approach came. We call out our number. We may call out, we may call out Wilson 23. We may ca call out 32 Blitz. We may call out, we may call out 32, which that really means something else. But those are all things that they understand. When I'm calling these things out, we set up that is the shell, but it's the premise of us running our matchup zone and where we're trapping in our matchup zone and where we're trying to force the ball out of our matchup zone.
So when you're explaining this and when you're kind of breaking this down to your guys who are just kind of coming into the system, how do you kind of get their mind kind of wrapped around it if they're coming from a system that maybe runs more of a, traditional man-to-man or, a different type of zone? How do you kind of make sure that they're kind of locked in and know exactly what it is you're looking for out of it?
Okay, so the first thing we do is we definitely start off in man sh a shell drill, just teaching the basic man-to-man principle so they can understand that. And then what we do a lot of is that we run a lot of disadvantage drills. So we'll run 3-on-2, 5-on-4, and what that does for us in the half court is it gets us to understand how we're trying to cover the points in our matchup zone when we have the disadvantage, meaning if we're trapping in particular spots or we're pushing the guys to a particular spot, we know where the open spots are and how do we cover those deficiencies. So it's a lot of that for us. It's a lot of that moving, running, understanding your spots from a disadvantage perspective. So then when you get that fifth guy in there, it almost feels too easy because you've been running 3-on-5 trying to play defense or running 4-on-5 trying to play defense and really understanding that you have to cover a lot of area and it requires a significant amount of communication and helping the helper in our matchup. Because if we're running our Wilson 23, for example, it has some concepts of a 1-3-1 because we'll put a guy on the ball and he'll push him to one side. And I got the one side thing from a guy out of Canada, where he was, having a discussion about winning by pushing everybody left. He just gave these statistics and all. I said, man, let me see how this would work for me. I tried it in summer league, and he was like, the premise behind it is that he doesn't care about the kid driving left. He said most kids, 80% of the kids, can't pass off their left hand. So he was like, what you want to do is you want to kind of play the percentages. And we tried that and we would shoot the gaps and we found that we were getting more steals and turnovers from guys running that concept within our matchup zone than not. So that was another layer to what we were doing.
No, that's great because that kind of segues almost into a little like plug for an episode that we actually had about, we had a guest come on a while back and just talked about his defense was just a lock left defense, kind of off that principle of even as you mentioned, like, even if they drive left, just the inability to pass to the left or the inability, how those gaps you could easily shoot those gaps off the left because of how awkward it is and how slow some of those passes or reads are and everything. And you can almost kind of see the discomfort, in the eyes right away and just pick up on that and pick those off. So, no, I thought that was great that you mentioned that. So I think one of the keys that I'm kind of getting out of this is I kind of think about maybe guests who are listening or coaches who are listening rather who might be looking to implement it is really, take your time and building it up. And that sounds like something that you're really key on is like you said, you start with kind of the man-to-man principles and really work from there. And it's not something that you can kind of rush in. And I imagine that you probably have these situations, and I'll let you explain about it where there is some difficulties, or players do struggle, and players, kind of hit the wall a little bit, and maybe there's a little bit of frustration there that has to kind of be overcome with some persistence and more practice.
Yeah, definitely. Like a lot, there's a lot of frustration for new guys that come in. And I'm thankful to have to have had such a young team that was with me from middle school and those guys kind of transfer in. So it was easier for me to teach it to the new guys that are coming in. And now that those guys are cycling out and graduating, the younger guys, they have it. So I can use the same concept with using the guys that really know it and implementing new guys that are coming in and kind of teaching it. It makes it a little bit easier to always have that younger class. And it's one of the things I do with even our JV and our freshmen, because I didn't have those teams before. Now we have all three levels. As I make sure that the coaches start at the freshman level teaching those concepts so that those kids that do make it to the varsity level, they already have an understanding of what we're trying to teach and the verbiage and the language that we're looking for at that level.
When it comes to the level of communication that's required, and that's one of the things that you emphasize is that is the level of communication that's needed, especially as guys, as you talked about, of helping the helper and rotating and just the general movement that needs to come off of running something like a matchup zone. How do you kind of work on teaching that concept of communicating effectively, of making sure that your guys are talking, saying the right things, knowing exactly, how to effectively communicate? What kind of goes into building that sort of verbal communication skills with your guys?
Now you may find this a little bit comical, but one of the things that is required there is my assistant coaches, they're required to, like, we break it down into segments. So the first segment may be movement, but the second may move segment may be talking, right? So if the entire team is not talking, let's say one person decides not to talk about a rotation, I got help, go underneath, regardless. If they don't say anything, the entire team has to get on the line and run a 9 seconds. So we kind of reinforce, like, hey, at the end of the day, it's not about if they scored on you. That's not our challenge there. It's if they score in the Wilson Academy. So you have to talk in order to make sure they don't score on the Wilson Academy, because the Wilson Academy is bigger than your individual name, stats, and number. So that's kind of how we overemphasize making sure these guys are talking. We emphasize talking in the weight room. We emphasize talking when we're running. We just try to make sure that they're constantly talking and constantly communicating as athletes, and then with the hopes that that translates when we get on the court.
And it's to me, in my experience, and I've talked about this with other guests as well, like that communication just it just doesn't seem to come naturally to players. It's not something that they are really going to naturally do, or maybe even naturally know exactly what it is to say. And I think I know for me as somebody who's had to emphasize a lot with defense over the years is making sure that I don't get frustrated as a coach, because I found that, sometimes I've had players who weren't talking or who were silent, not because they didn't want to talk, but they just didn't really know what to say, or they didn't really know what they should be saying. And it's like, okay, well, if that's the case, then we got to address that first. It's not a case of you not wanting to. It's you literally not knowing how to. And I think that that's something that you really got to be intentional about when you're teaching defense is building those players' vocabulary and that skill up.
Absolutely. And when we first start, we don't spend as much time on the language as we do talking. So I had a kid that was really introverted there last year. That was his first year in the academy, at Wilson Academy, and he was just, like, very, very introverted. And I was like, man, look, there's no way that you're going to be a point guard and not talk. Let's just establish that. And I said, so everyone on the team, let's welcome our new player, and if he doesn't talk, we're going to get on the line and run. And so he was like, coach, what am I supposed to say? I was like, I don't care what you say. Ball, I'm here. Give it to me. I don't care. Just talk. You know what I'm saying? And I said, we'll establish what you should say as we get into the point, as we get you more comfortable with your own voice. And I said, because that's your most powerful tool, your voice. And so it's a life lesson that I'm also trying to teach them, like to be unafraid of hearing your own voice and sharing your own thoughts. It's okay to communicate with your teammates, whether you agree or disagree, whether you like it or dislike it, you have to learn to use your voice.
Yeah, just start talking and we'll figure it out from there. Once you start talking, then we can build up the language. It's like, all right, we just got to get something out of you. Yeah,
We get
and that
something.
could be a big hurdle, right? That could be a big hurdle for players. It's just like they feel like almost kind of like, oh, what am I saying? I sound kind of silly. I don't know. It's like, yeah, but you gotta talk because everyone's gotta know what it is that's happening on the court or what it is that's going on. And I think for the way I've had to, talk about it with my girls before is just the idea of as you mentioned, right? It's bigger than you, right? Like you talking is it leads to a bigger outcome, right? It's like they're talking for Wilson Academy, right? The benefit of Wilson Academy is your talking sort of thing. No, for sure. Speaking of things that maybe aren't necessarily, 100% natural or the skills aren't 100% there. What do you find that you're working on in terms of on-ball defense and making sure that playing the ball correctly? I know you mentioned about the concept of going left. Are there other things that you really zone in on to make sure that the man-to-man principles are where you want them to be?
We focus on active hands because we like to play the passing lanes. We score it in a way that it doesn't have to be a steal or deflection. Means the deflection is just as important to us as a steal. We teach passing zones, meaning where most players usually make their passes and how to get our hands in those gaps to create havoc. And the other part of it is just making sure that we're staying in front and not on the side. We everything about us is we're just like we're leaders, so we want to play in front. So we front the post, we play in front of our guys, we're trapping high up front. So it's just a lot of a in front mentality that we're trying to instill in the guys, because I found a lot of guys when they come in, especially the post guys, they come in and they want to stand behind the guy and guard him. And I'm just like, in this league, at this level, when you're playing a 7A school, when the guy on the block is 6'11", 240, standing behind him, once he catches it, you only have one option. That's to
It's
foul
over,
him. So if you play in front of him and you make him throw it over the top, we have the backside help there because we're leaving the opposite corner open. You know what I mean? We're protecting the rim and we're forcing you to try to make a skip pass on us in most instances, because we just feel like that's a low percentage pass for most guys at the traditional high school level, making that skip pass on the move. That's just what we found from our studies. So at the higher levels, when you start playing, high level teams, high level national level teams, okay, they make those passes a little bit better, so we have to give a little bit of leniency there. But again, our premise is that we want to play in front with active hands.
Is that something that you find is easy to get your guys to be able to do, or is there maybe something instinctual that keeps them away from it, or is it kind of like a quick, easy, like, all right, we can play in front, we got a coach, we'll make it happen.
No, we work on it. Those are things we work on every day. We have drills where we work on staying in front of the guy, moving our feet. And if we do get beat, to sprint ahead to get back in front, or to meet him at the rim. And at that point, it's our guy that's on the backside help has to rotate, because inevitably sometimes you're gonna get beat. I mean, it's just a part of the game, and we accept that. But that help side guy needs to be in position the moment that he sees his teammate getting beat to step up, and then the help has to help the helper. So that secondary rotation needs to happen. And then that other guy, depending on what side it happens, where the guy is driving, he's either picking up the furthest guy in the corner, or we're coming to trap the ball at wherever that guy is. Because again, we run a lot of disadvantage drills, so they have to learn. Through our disadvantage, when we add the extra guy, where is he going? It's just we don't just want to run around on the court because we don't want to have three guys on one guy. We got two guys open. You know what I mean?
That's
So
kind of the sin, right? Once free, go on one or no,
yes.
absolutely. Let me ask you about, you just talked about trapping, and I love to ask us when this comes up about what goes into a good trap and how do you teach effective trapping? So I wanted to make sure I picked your brain on what it is that you do to make sure that the trap's exactly the way you want it, so there's no cheap fouls or anything like that going on.
Well, one of the things that we teach our guys is that our concepts is slots and corners. That's where we trap, and we're not trapping to get the ball. So that's how we keep from getting fouls. We're just like our premise for trapping is one, to speed the guy up, and to two, for him to make a bad pass from the lob it to try to, kind of throw it underneath and it's too low. And we bait the guy most of the time. We do this fairly well. We bait the guy to where we want him to throw it. Because let's say we trap it on in the slot on the right side. We take away the right corner, we cover the middle, and then our backside guy, he looks as if he's out of position, but he's waiting for the ball to be thrown, and usually it's going to be a lob pass to get it over the top of our guys that are trapping. So immediately on the flight of the ball, he's running as hard as he can, and it's pretty much like a volleyball tap. He's tapping it forward, and we're keeping it going. That's the premise. So even if we don't get it, we're tapping it where they can't get it, and it's a foot race to the ball.
I like, hold on, I gotta write this down. I do a little bit of writing on this. Well, because I'm telling you, coaches, some of these traps and some of this, sometimes that footwork, I've seen it. I'm sure a lot of coaches have seen it, where the trap isn't together. The feet aren't together. All of a sudden, they're splitting the gap. They're splitting it, or hands start coming down, and it's one of those when it looks good, man, it looks great. But there's so many little things that go into it that it looks so easy. I tell people this sometimes, when a trap is done well, it looks so easy. But man, there's so much that goes into it. There's so much, the little fine tuning that has to happen in it.
Yeah, because essentially we're trying to build a cage around that guy. So we try to be as close as we can, as wide as we can, to take away all opportunities for them to, like you said, split. Because that was one of the problems we had when I first started this, is them splitting the guy, because the guys are standing, they're kind of angling in a triangle of sorts with a gap in between, instead of coming together more like a bridge or two hands coming together. And I'm just like, listen, guys, you guys got to get to the point where you're okay with touching each other. You have to touch if we're trapping. And just keep your hands active and shadowing the ball, hands in his face where you can't see. And this is where talking comes into play. I'm like, at that point, I don't care what you're saying. I just want you to be loud and disruptive. Hey, ball, ball, ball. We got him, we got him, we got him. You're just constantly berating him, who, him or her, whomever. You're just berating the person and causing them to make this erratic pass, because then
Well,
you've done your
disruptive,
job. Yeah, you've done your job. We don't care about you stealing the ball on the ball.
I've always been switching gears a little bit as we kind of talk about the helping and communication and talking, just movement in general. One of the things that is always a little bit tricky, whether it's running a zone or even any kind of defense for that matter, is moving with the ball, moving on the pass, rotating as the ball's in the air, just that general keeping your feet moving and keeping going, so you're not getting caught flat-footed, you're not getting caught rotating incorrectly. So is there an element that you would say goes into to rotating correctly, getting your feet in the right position, moving as the ball moves? Is that something that you're needing to constantly emphasize? And what kind of goes into making sure that your guys are moving correctly as the ball's moving?
Well, a couple of things that we do is, and this is probably almost a, if it's not every day, it's every other day in practice. We start out with a drill that we call a star drill. And it's a 3-minute drill where they'll start under the basket, their feet are chopping and will blow the whistle, and they'll run from under the basket to the slot, and from the slot they'll run opposite corner, and they'll run from opposite corner underneath the basket to the other corner, then they'll go back up to the slot, and then they'll slide down, right?
I've done that. I've done the variation of that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so what we're doing at that point is we're just, number one, trying to get them to understand moving when you're going to be in a position where you're having a long closeout, right? And so we run that for 3 minutes. They take their break, and then we'll go into our disadvantage situation where it's two guys and it's three on offense, two on defense. And what we're working on at that point is we're working on moving on the flight of the ball. I don't care about if you get there or not. I care about, do you move when the ball is out of the other person's hands versus moving once they catch it? That's the emphasis. From that building block, then we get into kind of what our closeouts look like, because we want to really discuss what we're trying to do when we're running at the guy. We're not running through them where we're going to pick up a foul. We're running for a breakdown on a closeout, and we're pushing them outside. Nothing goes middle. Everything goes to the baseline, where we go. We're trying to push everybody to the corner for trapping, or push them into our help that's going to be coming with some of our little nuances that we run. That's kind of how we build it at Wilson, with understanding the proper technique, footwork. You know, again, we're making small corrections there with what the guys are doing, but more importantly, you have to, what we talk about all the time, is you got to get on your horse. Meaning you have to get on your horse and ride to that. You got to get there. And when you get there, you're closing out hard, high hands, talking, yelling, you're loud, and you're pushing them where you want them to go. If you're closing out to the corner, corner three, you're closing out with high hands, and then you're pushing them to drive underneath the basket, because we got our big guy that's rotating down, that's going to beat it. You're running him right into him. And all he has to do, he's 6'10". He put his hands up. You're clearly 7'5", 7'6". So just put your hands up and make them shoot over you. And most of the time they're putting it right in your hands, and we're going the other way.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've talked about this with my girls too, and it's funny. It's one of those things where it really clicks on them once they really start to see it, is just how much bigger, how much more disruptive, just how much better they get when their hands are just active, their hands are just moving, when all of that, you know. It's funny. It always seems to me, at least, that's kind of like the last thing. I get the legs going, we can get movement on a pass and rotate well, but just like those activeness on the hands, like get that upper body engaged and move, make yourself bigger, get yourself, you know, high up on those closeouts and things like that. And so I couldn't agree more. And one of the things too, coach, I feel like I've kind of heard you emphasize a couple times is, and I think this is really true of defense too, is, you know, you kind of talked about how, you know, for communication, you know, it's not necessarily about being perfect the first time, or even whether it's the way that you rotate or move on the pass, that it's not about your feet being, you know, perfect. It's about, did you move in the air? And I think that seems right. Like one of the things that you're emphasizing a lot is like, things don't necessarily have to be, you know, no perfect or down pat, but just the idea of, if you're going to play defense, you need to be communicating, you need to be moving, and you got to be giving me something to work with here, and then you can kind of like refine it later. And it sounds right. Like that's kind of an approach that you have as well.
Yeah, we definitely teach effort first. Like,
yeah,
that's the
yeah.
most
that's defense,
important
yeah.
thing is the effort and playing hard, because if you play hard, we can fix and teach you all the other stuff, you know. But we can't even get to any of that if you're not playing hard. If you're not, you know, with our big guys, you know, I'm fortunate to have, you know, two 6'10s and a 7-footer on my squad, but, you know, and a 6'8 guy on my squad, a 6'7 guy. But, you know, we spend a considerable amount of time with those guys just working on being aggressive rebounders, like hit somebody on the box out, and then pursue the ball, pursue it violently as if your life depended on it. And I know that sometimes you're going to knock some people down, but it's all in the it's all in good sportsmanship. You guys are not being reckless. I'm just saying be aggressive towards the ball. So that's always something I'm looking for when I have a big guy. If you're 6'5" or above, and this is what I've told them, I said, man, I've had to play in games where in my championship game, my tallest guy at the time was 6'3", and he was
Wow.
my best
Best
rebounder.
rebounder.
Yeah. And so, if a 6'3" and a 6'2" guard can rebound at a high level, then I can't take anything less from a guy that has, 5 to 6 inches on them. I'm like, you guys can do the same.
No, it's oh, I 100% agree. And it's funny too, kind of to that point of I was thinking about rebounding too. One of my girls that I had this year is great rebounder, but she's really undersized. But her mentality is just like, this is my ball, and like, how dare you like feel like you're gonna
Yes.
get it from me? Like, she's
Yes.
and I tell her, and maybe this will help, other coaches too, is sometimes you get, some of these taller players who do feel like, I don't know if entitled is the best word for rebounds, but they're so used to getting them that maybe they're not used really to fighting for them as much, that when you get
Right.
somebody who's like gonna fight for it, it's like, oh, I'm not used to this. I don't really like this. I don't like somebody coming at me trying to rip it from me. And
Right.
those players. It sounds like that's what your guy was like too. He's like, oh, this is mine. Like, thanks for holding it for me. I'm gonna take this from you now, or getting a
Right.
hand on. I'll get this now.
Yeah, I say we're either getting a rebound or we're getting a jump ball. We're going for it every time, man.
Nothing. Oh, no, nothing clean. I don't want no clean looks, no clean outlets, no clean anything. Everything's gonna get a hand on it for sure.
Yep.
You kind of touched on a little bit here and there, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of talk about your kind of your practice plan when it comes to defense and what it is you're looking to build. I imagine it changes a little bit from the beginning to the middle towards the end of the year, but what are your kind of points of emphasis, or maybe some of those non-negotiables as you're kind of working through defense and practices?
Just when we first start off in the preseason, everything about us is, you have to be in optimal conditions. So, we're working a lot of lateral movement with the guys, a lot of hip rotation, a lot of fast twitch reaction type drills, just to get them ready for what we're going to be doing defensively. Working on making sure their feet are quick and can move. We do a lot of footwork drills with ladders. We kind of almost train them like soccer players, to be honest with you, in the preseason, just making sure that we have great active feet. In addition to the conditioning part, to make sure that you can do it for, we're like, every person has to be ready to play 32 minutes. Whether you play it or not, you have to be ready to play 32 minutes. So we make sure that we incorporate your conditioning. Your footwork is like a soccer player, your conditioning is like a track runner, and your physical like a football player, all to play basketball. So we kind of
I
go through,
like that.
you know,
That's good.
we go through those progressions in our conditioning. And then when we get into, more of our mid-season, where we're starting to go over concept work, a lot of it is just, again, starting with that shell every day, making sure they understand how to rotate, how to move, how we're going to incorporate all of the stuff that we're working on in the conditioning phase on the court. And then we have some guidelines for our guys, some baselines that they have to meet. So let's say we're doing side to side slides. They have to do, like 21 touches in 30 seconds. That's one thing, for example. We may do instead of just running your traditional line drills, we're running our drills where you're running and then you're backpedaling back. You're running up and you're backpedaling back, because, again, part of what we're looking to do is get everybody to understand that we're sprinting to half court, then we're turning around so we can see what's going on.
Yeah, some game-like, yeah.
Yeah. So we try to incorporate as much of that in our concept work as possible, and making sure that we spend a lot of time on how to guard the pick and roll. Because if we do switch on a pick and roll and it's a big versus a small, the small needs to make sure they understand to keep their hands high to discourage the pass. If you can't stop it, you're at least discouraging it when you're running with the guy. And then again, we're playing in front and we're seeing how we can tap the ball back if possible, because our backside guy is going to be there. We teach a lot about blowing up screens. We're not letting any screens happen easily. And we're blitzing all dribble handoffs to shut them down to a degree, to the best of our ability. It usually works for us. So that's part of what we kind of keep in our fabric. And those are just some of the little nuances that we teach in our concept work that causes us to what's that that kind of reinforces the idea of playing hard. We're playing hard through every facet of the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean everything. It sounds very competitive. It sounds game-like, but also you're working on things that like these are, I'm gonna build up your conditioning for the things that you're gonna need to be doing like in a game. The way you're gonna have to be, rotating or moving or being able to, cut off something or the just your lateral movement, quickness, agility. It all kind of builds into like you need this because this is what you're gonna be doing when you're playing defense, for example.
Yep. And I require all of my players too. Like, I'm like, you have to study defenses with us. So, we send out the videos from the watch certain teams or watch certain defensive how-to videos. And then we come in the next day or the day after. I may not see that the first day, and the second day, I may call somebody up. I'm like, hey, you're going to teach this defense. Let's go. That's going to tell me if you know it or not.
That's the final stage of whether or not somebody knows something or not is if they're able to teach it to somebody. So
Can
that's like
teach
that
it.
final level of understanding. So how does that go? Is that you got I'm sure you must have some guys who go like, all right, coach, I got it. Give it to me. I'll run it and I'll teach it perfectly.
I have some guys that do understand it and they can teach it. I have some that just don't have a clue because they didn't watch it and they're not
They
listening in
expose
practice.
themselves,
Right,
right?
right. And so I had this, I ran one practice where I split the guys up. I was running like three groups where I had one group that I called the IQ group, one group that I called the talent group, and then one group that I call the play hard group, right? And that was three of my players. I broke them up and I split them up in teams. And I said, what I want you to do today is I want you to teach them everything you know. You have 10 minutes to teach them everything you know and everything you feel about the game. And we're going to get out there and we're just going to play. And it was really interesting to see it because it started off where the talent group, I mean, they were just way more talented than everybody else. And so they just outplayed you with their talent. And then the IQ group was like, man, look, just take this guy, don't let him do this and that. And they just started going on a run where they won like three or four in a row. And the guy that was over the play hard group, he was just over it, man. He was,
Oh, really?
look, guys, he was like, I don't care about their IQ or their talent. We just better get the ball and give it to me, right? And it was ridiculous in how he willed his team for the final 15 minutes of practice. They could not get his team off the court. Just
Wow.
off of just sheer playing harder than everyone else. And I was like, guys, I said, I hope we learn from this that we need all three to be successful. But if we don't play hard, none of this stuff matters.
Yeah, what a memorable like series of events though, a memorable kind of like practice situation though, where you have those like groups and it's like, oh, kind of it all kind of clicks like, oh man, we need everything though. Like you want every, it's like, yeah, we need the IQ. Talent's always great too, but it needs everybody, right? It's like defense, I guess. Everybody's needed. You need everybody. It's a team concept sort of thing. You see a whole bunch of stuff thrown against you on the offensive end. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about, what are coaches looking to do when they see you running a matchup zone? What sort of action are they trying to get to try and get you off your rhythm and trying to get a bucket? And how do you sort of counter and play that chess match to try to kind of anticipate what they're going to do and kind of react and be able to kind of attack it no matter what it is they're trying to run offensively?
Well, a lot of times when they do throw things at us, one of my kind of initial responses to whatever they're doing is to send a blitz at them and see how they respond to it. Because we'll start out most of the time, we'll start out telling my guys, hey, let's just start out a man and see, kind of what they're going to do. Even if we have a scout report, we want to see how they're playing today. And we'll kind of go into that, and then we'll throw them with a little bit of matchup zone to see how they respond to it. If the guys have scouted us already and know what we're gonna do, they kind of send kind of a high-low on one side of the court. So they run a triangle, I'll say it like they run a triangle action on one side to disrupt what we're trying to do. And I had to learn the first time a guy ran it on me when I was at a Thanksgiving tournament. We almost lost the game. I had to adjust really quickly. It's like, Coach, what are we supposed to do? Because we're supposed to be here and that and this. I'm like, man, look. I said, it's still all the same thing. I said, just tag your man. So the guy that's closest to you is your man, right? And I said, the zone principle is essentially we're playing off the weak side guy, and that guy is the runner. You know what I'm saying? And it was like, oh, got it. You know what I'm saying? And so we've had scenarios like that where they tried to either bring two and run a triangle on one side, or they try to take two guys underneath behind us because they're taller, to kind of beat us with that. And essentially when they do that, what we've had to do is when we're outsized, we just make sure that we bring our matchup high and bring our traps high to make sure the guards don't have a clear path to make the pass, and that's how we, try to counteract bigger teams that try to play us. So.
It sounds like kind of get up on them, get up, make just be disruptive, especially the vision part, as you kind of mentioned, like in anything that, we're typically undersized too, but anything as best we can do to kind of get up and disrupt their court vision, or just, make it where they gotta just work just that little bit harder to see something where it's not perfect. And that's, in my experience, where you kind of get that pass that's maybe a little off target, or that pass that, a little bit more of a rainbow sort of thing, or just not quite there. And you pick off a few of those and you're kind of off and running from there. That's awesome.
That's pretty much what you do, man.
I wanted to, before we kind of wrap up and hit our concluding segment, I wanted to ask you about, let's say a coach who's listening might be, a traditional, just like running a zone and or a traditional man to man, but they really, want to look into, going into this matchup zone type of things. What advice would you give to a coach who's maybe looking to kind of install a matchup zone, and kind of maybe in other words, what are some things, knowing what with what you know now, that maybe you would do at the beginning when you were installing it with all the knowledge you have of it now?
I think that, one of the things that I would advise to coaches, because, I was fortunate enough to be paid some really lovely flowers by a coach that ended up winning the state championship this year. He called me in after we played them to teach his guys our matchup zone. So that was the utmost respect from him, for him to call me and say that and ask me to do that. But one of the things that I would say is just knowing your personnel. Sometimes, when you're developing your scheme within your matchup zone, or any zone, anything that you're running, any defense that you're running, knowing where your weaknesses are and understanding how to kind of adjust to that. And to me, that's been the biggest part of my maturation as a coach. You may have, one season I have five athletic guys, but another season I have only two. So how do I still implement this concept with three unathletic guys, but they're bigger guys and longer guys. So I have to, kind of change their position and change their jobs of sorts in terms of maybe we're not trapping as much with these guys. We're just trying to cover more space
Right.
and make shots difficult. So that's what I would say to, any coach that's trying to start is just start with the assessment of your talent and what they can and cannot do. And it's okay if they can't do it. If they're not great with running from, slot to slot, then their coverage area is corner to slot. You know what I mean? And just be able to just work within there and adjust your defense for that.
And to that point, I know I completely agree. Is even as a coach, as you start to do that, whether it's a matchup zone or any sort of defense or offense you get, like that personnel always changes. And there's always those little adjustments that you got to make off personnel. And I know that you're probably kind of in that situation. I'm in that situation going next year where I know how things were run offensively and defensively for last year. But now I'm thinking, oh, well, I'm looking at my lineup next year. I'm like, oh, we're gonna have to maybe, stretch things out. Like maybe I can stretch things out a little bit more. Maybe I got a little bit more size. I can use that a little bit. But it's never the same, right? It's never the same 2 years in a row. And the personnel always changes. But I think that's part of the enjoyment is that you get to kind of play that little, like I said, that chess match of like, all right, we get to tweak it just a little bit now to maximize who we got. So no, that's great. This is awesome, coach. I could talk defense forever, but it's crazy how an hour just kind of flies by talking hoops. But I wanted to wrap up, coach, by giving you a couple questions that I have ask every guest, starting with this first one, which is thinking back on your coaching career. What is a moment from your coaching career that you think by sharing it, others listening would be able to learn from?
I would say that the one of the most pivotal moments for me as a coach was starting out at the younger level and just being willing to, as an assistant coach, just be willing to do whatever it takes to help my head coach win. So if that was coming in early, if that was sweeping the floors, if that was washing uniforms, doing the game film, I did it all. And I think by doing that, it gave me a greater appreciation, and gave me a better understanding when I became a head coach, what I was looking for and what I needed in a
Hmm.
in a group of assistant coaches underneath me.
Yeah, it's once you re if you really dive in, right? If you're an assistant or if you're a younger coach kind of jumping in and you really like dive all in on it and you try to be the best person you can be at that job, then when you do move up or when you do get that head coaching position, then you can really know like, okay, like this is what I really need out of, an assistant or somebody who's going to be on my staff. So I think it's great. I think it's fantastic. Always, of course, for coaches who can get those head coaching positions really young and maybe trying to jump right into it. But I know for me, it was invaluable to start off by, I did assistant, I did middle school, I kind of worked my way up there. So now it's like, okay, I know what it's like to be in that position and I know like what needs to be done to be successful there and kind of just working it up and seeing all the aspects of the different coaching profession, I think is really, really helpful as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
To wrap up, coach, I give every guest what I kind of call a 60-second soapbox. You can go over 60 seconds though. I'm not going to time you, but it's your platform to kind of get out a final message, a closing thought, a final idea, something that you want to leave the listeners with. You can take it any direction, basketball or coaching related you want. It's your soapbox. So I'm going to give you the platform to kind of just take it where you want, coach, and just kind of take it from here. So here you go.
Hey, well, I'll just say this, man. Coaching is not an easy job. But I would say, as you're going through your process as a coach, one of the things that I've learned is that first and foremost, you have to be true to yourself, and be honest with yourself. Take constructive criticism, and don't take things personally. Everything is a learning experience, good, bad, or indifferent. And if you have, a family, a wife, children, cherish that time with them when you get an opportunity, man. Like, don't get so wrapped up in yourself that you forget about them, because they are your first team. You know what I mean? So if that's what I would leave with any coach, any aspiring coach, because what I've found for myself is as I have grown in this sport, and have become more in demand, it does put a challenge on, the time, the quality time that I once had and was able to spend with my family. It's a little bit different. So I appreciate my wife for her support and all of her, taking care of things when I'm gone. She's my number one assistant coach. For as many as I have at my school, she's the number one. So that's just what I would leave. Just again, take all of those things in love and take it in stride, man, and just get better.
Man, and it can't say enough about a great support system either, huh?
Yeah, can't say enough
Having
about
that,
it.
invaluable. Oh, that's awesome. Coach, I really appreciate you coming on. Like I said, that time just flew by, but I really appreciate you being able to spend some time here talking about hoops, talk about matchup zone, defensive principles, practice, culture, all that great stuff. I think this is such a great time that this came out here during the off season, and gives us a lot to kind of think about and maybe make some plans or adjustments for what we might want to be doing for next year or down the road. So keep doing the great things that you're doing, Coach. Go have a great off season, have a great summer, even though there really is no off season in this profession, and go get after it next year, Coach. Really do appreciate
Absolutely.
you coming on, Coach, and talking to
Thank
us.
you, man. I appreciate you for having me. And you guys go out there and follow the Wilson Academy at TWA Basketball on Instagram, Twitter, and all your social media platforms.
Love it. All right, go. You heard it. Go ahead and give that a follow. Follow along with the journey. Thank you guys so much for listening. This was another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. We will see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. Make sure to connect with us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, or reach us directly through email at basketballteacherpodcast@gmail.com. Take care, be safe, and we'll see you next time.